Hello, welcome to Movies You Should See. This week, by some sick twist of fate, we're doing something that resulted in me watching Doctor Who and the Daleks from 1965. This is kind of a Movies You Should See, Greatest Show in the Galaxy, Starbase 66, and Laura's Here crossover episode. So I'm joined here by quite a few people with a big reputation in science fiction discussion. I'll introduce everybody as we give our summaries out for this. So let's start with Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Rich.
So you also had to watch Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, actually, I had this on video when I was a kid. And this is one of my dad's sort of, oh, we watched this when we were kids, now you can watch it sort of thing. And I am actually a Doctor Who fan, but I don't really class this as Doctor Who because it's a bit rubbish. It feels like someone's taken all the sort of bits of Doctor Who that they've heard about and sort of seen on the TV programs and then made their own version of it. As a sort of brief overview, I've seen it before. I watched it again today. I knew what to expect. It didn't surprise me. And it's not my favourite film of all time.
Okay. Now, Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I had a very similar experience. I remember watching this and the other one that Peter Cushing did, which when it was released in the States on Sunday morning TV, it was just called in the year 2125 or whatever the number is. And I remember as a 5-year-old watching these, and just the Daleks blew me away. I even had nightmares about Daleks as a kid. And then watching this now, thanks to Emma and Mike, and also the wonderful Mary out there, Mary Freer, I've seen a little more of the original Doctor Who's than I might have in the past. And this was very, you know, very clearly a cinematic reboot of the episode Dalek, right? Or Daleks, wasn't that what it was called? Or
yeah,
Dalek, yeah.
Dalek, yeah. But it just took all everything that was charming about the TV episode and just flushed it out the back of the TARDIS.
Yep.
I suppose watching it in the 60s when it came out, it probably was quite novel, but for where I'm at now in my Doctor Who-ness, it was a hard slog.
I'm with you there. Now then, Emma and Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Go on then. Somehow defend this.
I don't know quite why we've been casting the role as defenders. Because
I don't know either.
I think if we're totally honest, we kind of feel the same way about it. I don't want to speak for Mike. I mean, Mike might love it. I don't know.
Well, I can't say that I love it, but I don't mind it. I sort of accept it as a thing that's there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, you know, world on setting fire. No, that didn't sound right, but you know what I mean. Didn't set the world on fire for me, but it's there. I mean, it's not the sort of thing I would own on Blu-ray, but it's not bad. Not good, well, but it's not bad.
Speaking as someone who does own this on Blu-ray,
Emma.
What? Oh, are you really surprised?
No.
She watched Children of the Corn 4 the other day. There is no low level with this woman. There's nothing, you can't go too low.
I was saying that was mostly Chuck's idea, but anyway, it was, I sort of feel the same way as you guys. I sort of regard it as a curio, if you like. It's sort of an interesting kind of take on a lengthy classic era story. It's kind of like it's a very condensed version of it. I think that's why a lot of it doesn't come across. So I think, you know, the whole bit where they're trying to convince the Thals to go against the Daleks. That's a whole episode in the serial, not the 2 minutes it is in the film. So I kind of put it in the category of things I watch on Sunday tea time with a plate of sausage sandwiches and a cup of tea. It's kind of one of those, it's kind of got that nostalgic feeling for me. I mean, again, because I saw it when I was sort of 5 or 6 and I quite enjoyed it then, and I don't hate it now, but there is a lot wrong with it.
Now, I, as I said to you while I was actually watching it, if I'm not a big Doctor Who fan. I don't have a problem with Doctor Who actually these days. I do quite enjoy it, but I don't class my, I'm certainly not in the realm of you guys. But I am a big Star Trek fan, as is well known. And I kind of think, how would I feel about this if it was a Star Trek thing? Because it's just totally non-canon. They've taken the name of a character, a TARDIS, and Daleks, just the name Daleks as well, and the look, and they've totally screwed everything else up. They've just changed all of it.
It felt to me like the best way I can explain it is like when you want a toy and your parents buy you the rip-off crappy version rather than the real one.
It's the Chinese knockoff.
That's how it feels. Yeah.
It's the Chinese knockoff Doctor Who.
The fact that they call him Doctor Who and not it drove me up the fucking wall. I was like,
talking about it. Barbara, so Barbara is Barbara Who.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Susan is Susan Who.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it was Star Trek, I don't think I'd be able to just accept it. I would hate it. And so I'm kind of surprised that you don't hate it more than anyone else in the galaxy.
Yeah. I think it's because it kind of has like a kitsch kind of 60s charm to it. And it's got Peter Cushing in it. And, you know, it's not like you're watching kind of you're not watching bad actors doing a job. So I think you can kind of enjoy it as, you know, if you're kind of a fan of like the old Amicus and Hammer kind of style of films. I don't hate it, but as a canonical oddity, that does get on my wick. But it's kind of one of those things of it exists and hating it doesn't make it go away.
Fair enough.
Well, you know, something I've always liked about the Daleks is the way they talk. I love that gurgly electronic processing that they do. It may be weird that I've always enjoyed that particular bit of audio trickery. I could not stand listening to the Daleks, not because of they were doing the thing, but just, it was like somebody said, go talk like a robot into this microphone. And, Basil Exposition Dalek standing there going, you know, we will do this now. And they were just going on and on and on.
Well, do you know why that is? The thing of it is, the director, who's Gordon Fleming, didn't like realize that when the lights flash on top of the Dalek domes, that's when that was to indicate who was speaking. So that's why they sort of flash randomly throughout the movie. And when it came to like dubbing it, the voice artists were like, "Well, shit, how the hell do we do this?" And that's why sometimes they speak like as more regular Daleks, and then there's other times where it's a lot more laborious. So I think that's probably why that is.
I did notice that, actually, that sometimes they sounded like they were talking normally, and other times they really slowed it down, and it really... Yeah, oh, it's just annoying. One of the many.
But at least they had lava lamps. You got to give them credit for their style.
And shower curtains.
As Star Trek will back up, you can do a lot for sci-fi with a visit to the gadget shop. You really can.
You've got to love the 60s vision of the future, haven't you, really?
It's pink plastic.
I did like the amazing makeup job on the fowls as well. That was
on the fowls, yeah.
I've been trying to think of a way to describe that isn't really offensive. And I'm still kind of struggling.
It looks like what I looked like when I was 15 and first got my hands on a ton of makeup. Pretty much lay all out on the dressing room table and then headbutt it and see what sticks. Yeah. Really,
it's like the makeup shotgun Homer makes for Marge in that.
Yeah,
it was quite something. I still loved that in the 60s you could just do that and then someone's an alien.
I like that.
You know, it's no different to Klingons. Oh, he's got a beard. He's Klingon.
Yeah. Their okay. mutation from being in all that nuclear rubbish basically meant that they all had very, very shiny hair and weird makeup. That's their
Isn't that
mutation.
A horrible mutation to have.
Yeah.
You think of all the things that could mutate. No, really long eyelashes and blue eyeshadow. That's yeah. what you
Oh, and
get.
They're what? Wildly ineffectual as well. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
I think as... Yeah. They had to... The guys who were the Thals had to shave their chests and arms and stuff like that to put the makeup on. And there are kind of legends of people... Because they filmed this... I can't remember if it was this or the actual serial, because in the serial was black and white. But obviously they still had to put the makeup on. And there's legends of these guys having to walk around. And there was like an Air Force base nearby. And like trying to scrub this makeup off and it wouldn't come off. And yeah, it's kind of like the anecdotal history of Doctor Who. That's one of the main things that comes out. But I think the reason why maybe we don't hate this as much as you would expect is because a surprising amount of what they do in these films actually ends up in the show proper.
Yeah.
Like the Daleks ended up getting used, and I think it's in the, I can't remember if it's in this film, but definitely in Dalek Age of Earth 2150, like the way the Daleks behave and their unit of time, because they measure time in rels, that all ends up in the show. So although this isn't canonical, it does kind of lend a bit to the show later on.
Yeah, also you got you can see like the police box doors like inside the TARDIS as well. That was a big thing I noticed.
Wasn't the TARDIS good? Oh my gosh.
No.
Yeah.
Well, do you know why they changed it? Why did they decide to alter who the Doctor is or was?
Well, to make it more accessible, I think, was the idea. Because you have, if you're trying to, remember, this is an 85-minute movie, so you want to just sort of get in and get started and get to the adventure. So you don't want to be sitting there explaining, well, he's an alien, and here's this box that is bigger on the inside than the outside, and then, you know, it's easy just to say, he's a human, he made it, let's go on an adventure. Rather than, you know, trying to fill in a backstory that's taken them years on the show.
Yeah, I think it'd only be like an image reference to the series, but you know, what reason is the TARDIS? Well, what reason is TARDIS, I should say? Cause, oh, fuck. I don't know what it is. The lack of the definitive article really pisses me off in this movie. I don't know why.
Because it's stupid.
Yeah, but then again, why does the exterior look like a police box? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, at least in the series, it had a point, because you know the TARDIS is supposed to disguise itself wherever it lands. When it landed in England, it changed into a police box and this chameleon circuit got jammed. But obviously it's an invention of Doctor Who in this movie, so why does it look like a police box?
Yeah,
that never occurred
to me. It is bizarre what kind of they take away from the show and what they leave behind. I mean, the whole reason why they get stuck on Skarrow is like because the Doctor wants to explore, so he sabotages the fluid links, which is what he does in the serial. But it just seems so bizarre to do it in the film because there's kind of no reason to do it.
Well, I think it's also sort of like a part of like the Doctor Who's characterization in this, because when you look at Peter Cushing, you know, he's quite boyish in some ways. It's got this sort of childlike glee when he's exploring Skarrow. In the serial, you know, it's William Hartnell doing it, but you can understand William Hartnell doing it because at that point in the series, his Doctor was still, let's put it mildly, pretty much a fucking jerk. You know, he hadn't really mellowed out or anything. He was still being extremely abrasive and insulting. And so that was entirely his doing. In here, you know, there's a couple of moments where he sort of looks at Susan and winks. You know, it's like, I'm going to do something cheeky here, and she's totally complacent with it.
I actually quite like Peter Cushing as Doctor Who.
Oh, I do, yeah.
I think that's why it gets quite a lot of a pass for me, because I love Peter Cushing. So, also, Roy Castle, rest in peace. Yeah, it's, you know, as a kid growing up watching Record Breakers, I have a lot of time for Roy Castle.
Yeah, I
that,
do.
That Ian or whatever his name was.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm interested. So, Rick, what do you know of Roy Castle? Nothing?
Nothing. What I saw last night.
Right. He's an extremely famous...
He is somebody over there?
Yeah, he was an extremely famous person who died a few years ago. Famous.
1994.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, don't you feel old?
Yeah. Wow. But he famously died of lung cancer and wasn't a smoker. But he blamed it on being... He was actually a trumpet player and a tap dancer, amongst many other things. And he I think he either held or does hold the world record for something like the most number of taps in an hour.
Yeah, he does. I think he still does, yeah.
He's like... he was a super fast tap dancer or something like that. And he hosted a show on Kids BBC called Record Breakers for years. So, in fact, everyone here will have seen it as a child. And it, where every week they break records and put them in the Guinness Book of World Records. And so he was huge here for decades and always on TV. Just always on TV. One of those people that the BBC would always have a vehicle for Roy Castle. Certainly throughout my lifetime.
We'll say we have a nice thing.
He reminded me a lot of...
So go, Emma.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the other nice thing as well was that after he died, that a lot of the Doctor Who conventions that went on kind of in the immediate aftermath raised money for his widow. So, you know, even though we don't really care about the movie, we care about Roy Castle.
I did like him better than the putt school teacher that was his character in the serial. But that's looking
Whoa.
At it.
What?
Whoa.
I think you may have started
Jesus
something.
Christ.
Run.
You son of a
No,
bitch.
He really but in the TV series. in the TV series, it really grated on me how much the guy was always yelling at the doctor.
The doctor was an asshole.
He was.
And you see, they've effectively been kidnapped.
Yeah. That was the point. I think I'd probably shout at the doctor as well if he did that to me. I agree with what you're... No, actually, I don't agree with what you're saying, Rick. I'm with Emma. And
I can't believe... I've never heard someone diss Ian before. I'm just amazed.
Oh. But I have to say...
Granted, I saw the Unearthly Child for the first time last year. So I was coming at this very late into the game with my own very strongly established ideas of who the doctor is and what he should be putting up with. And so just that whole dynamic of, you know, I'm going to be the alpha male and you're going to do what I say, and the doctor just going, eh, fuck you, I'm doing whatever I want. It really grated on me. But that's, you know, I admit I'm coming at it backwards. Whereas the guy in the movie, Castle, he reminded me a lot of Roddy McDowall, who was in everything in the 60s and 70s too. It was just more like comic relief and nobody really paid much attention to his demands. I that worked better for me.
I don't think there's really an issue with the actors or the acting in this film either. I think that, that's not the problem. Well, it's certainly not the problem that I really had with it. It was more the weird... Oh! Sorry. Or the weird non-Doctor Who stuff. I don't know. I never had a problem with the actors in it. It's everything else that I had issues with.
Well, the problem I have with Ian in this movie is he's such a wet noodle. You know, because, I mean, when they're in the forest, they're in the jungle, rather, and, you know, Barbara's been saying to him about, oh, this place is giving me the creeps, I don't like it, something's wrong here. You know, when he goes to the doctor and says, you know, maybe we should be going, the reason he gives isn't because he's concerned for Barbara. If he said, oh, you know, Barbara's got a bit spooked, you know, that'd be one thing.
Yeah.
But he says, oh, they'll be expecting me at home. It's all about him for some reason. And, dear God, the pratfalls.
Yeah.
The amount of times
they
stumbled over
to me. Started to get on my nerves after a while.
And the bit where they're trying to get into the Dalek City in the first part.
With the door.
the door, the gag sequence with the door. I'd like to quote, if I may, the Riff Tracks commentary. It says, same door opening puzzle mechanism as the original Legend of Zelda. 5 years old, 5 years old, figure this out, dude.
It did. That was. That's about the moment that I thought, I'm not going to sit and watch this. I'm going to play on the internet while I watch it, because it's starting to get on my nerves. But I do remember the next one, the Invasion Earth film.
2150.
I think I preferred that. I haven't rewatched that since I was a kid, but that seemed to be the one that was on constant rotation at home. Whereas this one, I think we watched once and twice, and that was it. And it got sort of relegated to the back of the video pile.
2150 was on TV a lot more, it felt like. I remember it did seem to be more of a sort of Sunday, Saturday sort of staple. And I agree, it is a better film. There's more happening in it. Although the day is saved by the universe's most strongest plank of wood at the end. I can't disagree with anything you said. It's one of those, I've sort of come at it from kind of a nostalgic place, I think, which is why I give it more of a pass than I wouldn't give to a lot of other things.
I think that's the thing. I think if had we done 2150, I would have been nicer about it. I haven't rewatched it recently, so maybe I'm wrong. But I think because I preferred that as a kid, I probably would have felt a little bit more sentimental about it. Whereas this one, like I say, it was the one that we watched a couple of times and then that was it. And around the time that we would have been watching this, we were also watching old Doctor Who anyway. And I preferred that anyway. So even back then when I was a kid. So I don't know. I struggle with even sentimentality on this one. I just found it a bit meh and annoying.
So this film is actually a TV series as well. Not that I mean Doctor Who. A series within. Yeah. Which what is it? What's it called?
It's Dalek, isn't it? Is it called?
Yeah,
the Daleks. Yeah,
the Daleks. Yeah.
Just wondered if it was on Netflix, because I've seen no old Doctor Who.
I don't think. I think this is. I might be wrong. Actually, I'm probably not the person to ask. Emma and Mike probably would know better than me, but this is one of the first ever. It was in the first series, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was episode two, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it
was
effectively the second story.
Oh, so this might be difficult to watch in its original form anyway.
I found them about a couple of years ago. I found them online, which you can, if you type in old Doctor Who, because a lot of them got lost by the BBC. They've been sort of made up by stills and just the audio, and some of them are like the whole TV program. I can't think where, but they're definitely not on Netflix.
Right.
Okay. But this does exist in its entirety.
Yeah.
You can get this on DVD and watch it.
Yeah, I've seen it. We got it from Netflix, but it wasn't streaming. We had to get the DVD. It came the first two. I think it was the first two. It was The Unearthly Child and the Daleks was on.
Daleks,
the one. Yeah.
Netflix actually have a very small amount of Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's very like one or two episodes of each season of each series is available.
Are you on Netflix UK or Netflix America?
I think I'm on Netflix America.
America, for some reason, I think, if I remember rightly, seems to have more. We have both set up, so I'm sure it's the American one that I go to for Doctor Who, because they have slightly more than the English one, which is a bit weird. But
Rich.
Oh, I'm actually on Canada. Yes, Mike.
If you go onto iTunes and search Doctor Who, there's a collection under the TV section which says Doctor Who Monsters, the Daleks, and there you can watch all seven episodes.
All right, on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Might give it a go. Yeah, I'm on Netflix Canada here, and they've got four, what they're calling collections. Each one is four episodes, and there's only four of them. And then they've got the new ones. But that's
I would say that if you're going to watch the TV show version of it, be prepared to struggle with the pace.
Okay.
Because it's seven episodes of 20-ish minutes. And like I say, if you watched the film version, there's going to be stuff where you're going, they literally did that in 2 minutes in the film version. And in the other thing, it's a whole episode. So, I mean, because like I say, the bit where they're talking to the Thals about launching an attack on the Daleks, that is a whole episode.
Right. I do you know, I'm not going to pay money for this. I think I might just give it a miss.
Maybe if you're not a Doctor Who fan, I wouldn't pay money for it.
Yeah, I'm not to that level. I mean, I watched it when it was on TV when I was a kid. I think the first Doctor that I have real memories would be... Colin Baker? Is that right? Is that a person?
Yeah, that's a person, yeah.
I think it would be him.
The sixth Doctor, so yeah.
Yeah, but I've never really gone back and watched previous Doctor Who. And it's, I don't know, I can, in the same way that I can understand somebody might have difficulty with original series Star Trek if you've not seen it years ago, it's difficult to go back to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
I won't argue that, yeah.
It's just, I would never, I mean, oddly enough, me and Mike did an episode sort of on along these lines, in that we were talking about the Dalek serial, when we were sort of like, you know, we would never recommend that serial to someone who's never sort of sat down and watched any kind of first, second, third Doctor, because you would just say, I think the pace would absolutely kill you. Hmm. Because it's so much slower, and they repeat themselves a lot, because, you know, there was no conception this was ever going to be recorded and watched again and again, so you have to catch up people who are watching it, who are coming in episode 3, and yeah, I think you would find it difficult.
Yeah, I'll miss it then. Okay.
it's fun to watch the first episode just for the experience of seeing what live TV was like. Because you know you see people flub their lines and ad lib, or you know the walls of the TARDIS are just painted drops or stuff like that, you know, stuff that would never have been visible on you know, a 1964 little tiny TV screen, but in brilliant HD on a you know, a huge LCD screen, it just screams at you. But yeah, I don't think you need to watch the whole thing.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm still missing Star Trek in HD. I need to get my priorities sorted. That's my problem. What else?
I just got the Blu-rays of TOS for Christmas this year, and it's fucking gorgeous.
Now, I think the Netflix TOS are in... No, they're not in HD, are they? They are the enhanced versions, but they're not the HD enhanced versions. So, yeah, I need those. But I vowed not to buy any more Blu-rays, so I don't know what to do anymore. I'm declaring Blu-ray dead, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's caught up with everybody yet, but I'm done with it. What else do we have to cover on Doctor Who, then?
Well, was anyone else as upset as I was when they made their final assault on the Dalek city and decided to bring the 10-year-old with them?
The whole thing upset me, Rick, if I'm honest. From beginning to end. I mean, just the whole lot, really. I'm also trying to think, you know, just looking at it from Roy Castle's character's point of view, you're just going around your girlfriend's house, and her granddad zaps you off to God knows where, and suddenly you're at a war with Daleks. That's annoying. The whole thing is just
incredibly ineffectual Daleks too.
Yeah,
they're quite ineffectual in the serial as well.
Mm. Yeah,
because it's the first time you see them, because it's that thing that TV Tropes calls early installment weirdness. They haven't quite worked out what they do and how they're going to do it and how scared you should be of it and all this sort of thing. So, well, you know, this whole thing of them being confined to their city because they need the static electricity from the floor and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it's...
So they're basically sentient bumper cars.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With defeated grabbers. By plastic.
Yeah.
I would say they have... As well, they have... I think they're not... Because I'd missed the plunger.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't like the grabber thing. The plunger's much better.
Well, some of them had the plunger and some had a grabber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were meant to
have flamethrowers.
Mm-hmm.
But they thought that was too violent, so that's why they have the sort of fire extinguisher thing. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think they wanted to try and do the usual sort of like extermination effect as it was back in the day, where the picture would turn negative, but they probably couldn't do it on film. Well, obviously because film negatives, they couldn't actually work it out. So then they went to the flamethrowers, and then the censor went, "No, you can't do that." And then they went to the fire extinguisher. So
I think flames would have been terrifying. And they couldn't also stun you with flames.
No.
Yeah.
Like they did.
There is an episode in the series where they do have flamethrowers, and it is quite cool.
Terrifying. I don't know. I flip back and forth to whether Daleks are scary or not.
Daleks are scary when they're used kind of like zombies, when there's like hundreds of thousands of them pouring down on you, and there's just nowhere to get away from them. That was like the nightmares I had as a kid. Because I like
go carry on, Rick. Sorry.
Oh well, when it was released over here, it was just in the year 2150, which is why it caught my attention, because I was, you know, a Star Trek kid and stuff, and that was the first one I saw too. And I just, you know, it was Daleks taking over the Earth, and I remember it being really scary, and I remember just having dreams of hundreds and hundreds of Daleks rolling around screaming exterminate. You know, in this one, when you've only got about six of them, and all you need to do to stop them is jump on them and cover up their eye hole.
With weird brown mashed potato. Yeah. Whatever that was.
Mashed potato with Henderson's relishing.
Quite possibly.
That's what I came to the conclusion of.
I think that the Daleks are scary for me in a sort of body horror kind of way, when you realise that, you know, they're mutants inside there, and they were like us, but they've become sort of so twisted and messed with and all this sort of thing. They can only exist inside the shell and all this sort of thing. So in that respect, they're quite weird and odd. But as a threat, I don't find them frightening. I think because I've sort of grown up watching them. They're things that aren't frightening to me. I don't know why. I mean, they're not scary to me in the same way, like if we're talking Doctor Who villains, we're talking about the Silence and the Weeping Angels. Those are scary. Daleks are not.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think
it's
because they're just so weird and unusual as well. Like, for example, you were saying about the Silence and the Weeping Angels in two in particular. You see stone statues everywhere, so that's quite creepy. Whereas you only ever see a Dalek in the sort of, you know, Doctor Who universe, so to speak, and it's not so creepy then, is it? It's just a weird robot monster thing. Cybermen used to get me. They were the ones that scared me, because they scared my dad as well. So when you see your dad cowering behind the sofa with you, you sort of...
I think it's interesting that it's sort of Daleks kind of got latched onto in this way of being this kind of... I think as well they're not scary because there's such a huge craze about them. Because after these films came out, it was the advent of something called Dalek Mania, and there was actually quite a good documentary about that as well. That they were everywhere. There were just every sort of conceivable bit of merchandise you can think of, sort of had a Dalek on it, and you can get Dalek dress up suits and sort of novelty records and everything under the sun you can think of. So there's no way to make your monster less scary. Is to dilute it so much. It's kind of the same way with slasher movies, that in the later days, you know, Jason Voorhees, Freddy, they're not scary anymore because they're on t-shirts and they're advertising bloody KFC to you and shit like that. It's like, you know, you can't be frightened of it anymore.
I did enjoy the Freddy Krueger KFC ad. That was something special.
I'm gonna have to look this up.
It's not a real thing. Don't worry. Not a real thing.
Just made it up. I made it up.
Oh, okay. I want it to be a thing now.
Do you know if this film actually managed to get more fans for Doctor Who? Did it make Doctor Who bigger?
Well, it made the Daleks bigger. I don't know if it made Doctor Who itself bigger. Because the Daleks were sort of, they're on the show a lot, but nowhere near as much as I think people think they were. So I know that, you say, people went crazy for the, it was kind of like the toy crazes before, like Cabbage Patch Kids, Tamagotchis, Furbies, but everyone went mental for them for like a few months, and then that was it. So... Yeah. You know, it speaks to the fact that we have two of these films, and they conceived these that you would have one of these every year. They would just churn these things out every year, and you know, the fact that we've got two, I think, speaks to how it didn't quite work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now I kind of thought it sucked more for the Thals. I mean, the Daleks kind of looked out for each other, more or less. Although, why in your fortress do you have like places you can hide on either side of the door?
To be honest, the Thals are shit. They're coming from the source material, the fowls are shit in the source material also, so what can you do?
Well, like the poor guy that got killed in the fires, I mean in the swamp, that like whatever ate it, you know, pulled him into the water, and then everybody else comes up and goes, oh, where's Bob? Oh, better not look in that bubbling there, let's just go.
Leave him, he's gone!
Sucks for him. Shouldn't we check?
I must admit, I would not have like put my arm down into the bubbling to look for Bob. I'd have left him to it.
It happens in all these 60s films. It's kind of all these kind of, not kiddie, but sort of family, allegedly family-friendly kind of sci-fi fantasy epics that they always have a huge cast of really dispensable people that they don't, that someone will be killed and no one gives a shit. You know, like Jason the Argonauts and stuff, they set off with like this giant fleet of people and end up with like two guys at the end. Like one of them gets, you know, absolutely wrecked by the bloody skeleton army. He's like, oh, well, leave him. He's done. He's like, no, come and help me. No, leave him. He's done. Go.
On to the next scene.
We only hired him for 2 days. Damn it. Move on.
Well, have we come to the end of this? Can we put this one to bed?
I feel so bad.
It's okay. It's okay. Don't feel bad.
I keep trying to think of something good to say about it. I mean, I agree that all of the actors did their jobs just fine, and it's so strange seeing Peter Cushing so young. But yeah, I can't defend this film at all.
I think the only good thing to say is that even in, say, countries with the most oppressive regimes running them, they aren't even going to make you watch Doctor Who and the Daleks. So, you know, there it is. Maybe you'll enjoy it. That's just my opinion. And what does that matter? There's four of you today, so I don't even get a vote today. That's how it works. I only get a vote when there's only three other people on the show. So my opinion doesn't matter today. I shouldn't have watched it. No, I have to watch it. I have to watch it. I have to have seen the film. So that's it.
Well, you know it's good when you receive an outraged Facebook message from the person who's
So let's give this film a mark out of 5 and see how it fares against Judge Dredd. Just let me type Doctor Who and the Daleks. I have to stop talking to do that.
Okay. I also loved how it was the women thalls who had the mirrors that saved the day. That was a charming bit of 60s sexism there.
It's not a 60s film unless, you know, one of the women becomes hysterical and has to get a slap as well.
I did actually, yeah, I did like that bit where Barbara got stuck in the corridor. So the door closed and she couldn't get out, and she ran back and realized the other door was closed. And the scream that came out of her was like someone was trying to gut her alive. All that had happened was that she was locked in.
I like her massive hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can't beat a bit of 60s hair, can you?
So, Rick, what do you score this film out of 5?
Oh, fuck, 2. If they hadn't changed the basic premise of the whole idea of the Doctor, I would be more forgiving because of the time it was made. But that right there just, it drained any possibility of this movie having any charm. So, 2.
Okay. Laura?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 2 as well, just for Peter Cushing, really.
Fair enough. That's what I would have done. Emma?
Okay. I view this with kind of a lot more kind of fondness and nostalgia, and also, apparently, you know, I've now developed a Will Tristram-like reputation for liking shit things. I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay, and Mike?
I'm with my co-host in Space and Time here. I give it a 3. It's not the best movie. Like I say, I probably wouldn't own it on Blu-ray, but, you know, it was fine.
Well, we collectively, we're saying it's as good as Judge Dredd. So, okay. That's an interesting thing.
Well, you know, something I just remembered. When... you know, I had seen the first two, the two movies that we're talking about right now, when I was little, as we established. Then in 1980, maybe 79, when Doctor Who started being broadcast on my local public radio, or not public radio, public TV station, and I saw Tom Baker's first episode, Robot. It took me a while to figure out what the hell was going on, because I knew Doctor Who as Peter Cushing, a human who cobbled together a time machine in his backyard. So that's another reason, you know, this is not something that should, that you could show someone and say, okay, this is Doctor Who, so watch this movie and then watch the series. Because if you watch the movie, it's going to screw you up for the series, as it did me.
I think it's mean to ask anyone to watch this film, full stop.
Oh, <I'm sorry. laughs>
Can I request that we do a good film next time? Because I've had a lot of crap films in the last couple of episodes.
I'll make sure we do a good film next time, Laura.
Thank you.
Don't worry. It'll be fine. I don't know what film I've got coming up next this week. It should be something good, hopefully.
Well, we've got Brick.
That's Wednesday, though.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow,
Night of the Living Dead. Tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah, that's
a good movie.
Which version are you doing? The new one or the old one?
This 1968 original.
Okay.
Which I may or may not rewatch. I don't know. I never saw the end. It's just a zombie film, isn't it?
It's a zombie film.
Well, yeah, I know that. I would
implore you to see the end. It's quite important.
Right, I'll watch the end then. Okay. And then Brick and Best in Show, and then another one that I realize we haven't chosen yet. Should probably get on that. So thank you for doing the show today, everybody. It's been wonderful. Even though I watched Doctor Who and the Daleks, that's fine.
Jesus.
They're not all winners. It's all right.
Yeah. I take it this wasn't a movie you should see with that score.
No, it's not.
No. Good.
But as I explained to Alison, when she was watching it and getting angry, and just saying, is this a movie you should see? And I said, no, we used to be called Movies You Should See, but now we're called Movies You Should See. So it's okay. We can do this. It's fine. We'll decide if it's a movie you should see or not. We have decided it is not, but that's fine.
You know, my wife watched this with me, and she has a much higher tolerance for bad movies than I do. And even she at the end was like, wow.
Oh, wow.
Did Sharon like it, though?
I think that's a no.
Yeah, that's it's certainly not a yes, is it?
Oh, no, we watched it while she was at daycare, so she wasn't. We don't get to watch grown-up movies while she's conscious.
No, I thought she'd like the Daleks and stuff, you know, because I know that she likes R2-D2 and all those sort of things. So I thought she might like Daleks.
She likes Daleks, and she calls them Dagex.
Oh,
it's very adorable.
Bless.
So, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back with more shows later, as I'm sure you're aware. Don't forget, you can get our entire back catalogue on Simply Everything, where you might be listening to this in the future, when it's old. It's quite new right now, I'm just recording it, but there you go. All of that's online at simplysyndicated.com. Go and check out all the other shows that these wonderful people appear on. There'll be links in show notes and all over SoundCloud and places like that. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.